Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years. Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map.
Hey listeners, welcome to another episode of These Parts. I'm Elliot McNally, and right next to me is the brother, friend, and traveling companion with whom I share my hosting duties, Vince McNally. How's it going, Vince?
Elliot, it's going great. It's going positively great. I'm feeling resourceful. I'm feeling reinvigorated.
I'm feeling I can't even say it, but I'm feeling reinvigorated as well. We are in a super fun town today. Have you enjoyed yourself this past week, Vince?
Immensely. I love seeing places in the great United States of America that are built upon resourcefulness, ingenuity, and visionary ideas. And I feel like the town we're in today, well, let me spoil it, Southeast Cumberville is really a hallmark of that concept.
I think so too, and I would argue that the entire McNally name and lineage is a hallmark of building something and being resourceful as well.
You're of course correct, as always, Elliot.
Rand McNally, at first, he didn't know how to make maps. He didn't know what a map was, but he set out and he did something. And, you know, granted, his first maps weren't really that. They were just pieces of paper with some scribblings of directions written on them. But still, he made something of it. And we wouldn't be here today if it weren't for him.
Absolutely. I think a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with the first ever Rand McNally map. It's on showcase, rightfully so, at the Smithsonian. And it is simply a piece of parchment paper with the words, all the places in the world, written on it.
Yep.
As you can see, humble beginnings. But it's really, when it comes to starting something, when it comes to blazing a trail, it is the thought that counts.
And with that, you know, I think that we should put this town on the map.
I can't wait.
So listeners, take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall maps in whatever form you have it. Maybe you have the original version, the steel-plated version, the woven tapestry version. Any other versions you want to give a shout-out to, Vince?
I do want to give a quick update on the spice paper version.
Yeah, how's our friend doing?
Not well. Apparently all the spice paper fields have been napalmed by Russian insurgents.
Really? I didn't hear that. Were you talking to Xander this morning?
I was. He said our connection in northeast Pakistan was very distraught. Thankfully, no one was injured, but in a sort of agro-economic power play, Putin's people put the napalm drop on the old spice paper fields.
Oh, no. Because I got an email this morning that said if we just wire an extra $5,000 via Western Union, that we should have our maps by a couple months from now.
I feel like that communication may have been out of date, Elliot.
Okay. Anyway, listeners, take out your push pins and get ready to stick a pin in, as Vince alluded to, Southeast Cumberville, Georgia. This town has an industry and economy centered around the repurposing of peach pits. And here today to talk with us is the chief innovations officer of that town. Any idea centered around the repurposing of peach pits goes through this man. Would you care to introduce yourself?
Yes, I would. Howdy, how y'all doing?
We are fantastic.
Well, that is good to hear. My name is Vladimir Pichachenko.
Vladimir Pichachenko? Am I getting that right?
You are getting that right, and I would say that you two have misstepped a little bit in talking about the Russian napalming of these rice fields.
Admittedly...
I'll stop you right there, and I'll just let this slide for now, but... let's just keep on track. Let's keep talking. Let's keep talking about this great town here, and let's not forget where we all come from.
Well, thanks. I mean, you obviously come from Russia, but we appreciate your hospitality. Vladimir, why don't you give us just a little background of Southeast Cumberville and how you ascended the ranks to become Chief Innovations Officer.
And before you do, can you stick a pin in Southeast Cumberville quick for us?
Yes, I can real quick. Here we go.
And there it is.
There it is. Well, anyways, I'm here in Southeast Cumberville, and I rose the ranks, as you say, after my great-great-granddaddy came here from Russia, who I think may have known your great-great-granddaddy back in the day, as we say down here. So he has ties to Russia as well. And I ended up rising the ranks here and learning all about repurposing peach pits because, you know, back in my home country, we learned how to use our resources very wisely and thoughtfully. There was not much available in communist Russia. And so I brought that tact here, and now I'm head of innovations with the repurposing of our great peach pits.
Well, and, you know, this may be a testament to how people grow peaches in Russia and how you continue to grow peaches here. In my experience over the past week, the peaches are inedible. And so it makes sense that you would try to salvage it and use the peach pits to make something better.
Yes, I agree. I mean, if you're going to have to throw it out, then you might as well, you know, save what you can of it. You guys know about what they say over there, a Russian peach. They started talking about Georgia peaches here because of we have that saying there, Russian peaches. It's about women. Yeah, I mean, we got to use those pits somehow, and we put them to good use, making everything from, you know, automobile engines. They don't work properly, but we also, and if you all are interested, we do make paper out of them too. I know you're talking about this rice paper, but
well, you know, we might have to be talking after the show because I smell another map in the works.
I do too. It smells like a peach.
Peach pit paper map. I'm in, Elliot. I know it was a tough sell.
I'm writing a check as we speak.
Do you faintly hear Xander screaming from our offices in New York?
I usually do, but it might be my tinnitus acting up from countless hours of him screaming at me over the phone.
We're already off on such an entrepreneurial bent, it's almost inescapable for me to want to segue into this next segment, Elliot.
Giving them the business.
So in the towns that me and my brother visit, we love to stop by and see what entrepreneurialism and innovation is like on a local level. So we stop by the mom and pop shops that make the towns that we visit great. We were excited to do this for Southeast Cumberville because it's such a resourceful town and it's full of people making the best out of an interesting product, the Peach Pit. Vladimir, what are some of your favorite Peach Pit-centered businesses here in Southeast Cumberville?
Well, there are a few different kinds, and you know, there is just your regular old Peach Pit Museum, which that's a sort of a repurposing of another kind. You know, we don't really do much to it aside from put the Peach Pit on display.
What sort of famous Peach Pits are available for people to see there?
Well, it's all different kinds. I mean, we brought the peach. I shouldn't say we, but my family brought peaches here from Russia. So we have specific Russian-style peach pits, which are very large. And then we have other American-style peach pits, which are very measly and small. They don't much look like anything but a raisin. And we put these in a glass case, and you know, you can tell from size which is better.
I had a chance to check out the museum, and I want to say, even though there are some, you know, distinctively Russian undertones, Soviet undertones to everything in the town, you guys do pay homage to American history. Vince, one of the most amazing peach pits I saw was actually, from what the proprietor tells me, was a happy accident. One day, a peach pit sort of rolled over the heating grate, and it just reminded him of that great Marilyn Monroe scene. So he put a little skirt on the peach pit and displayed it right over the heating vent.
Yeah, you gotta respect the people of Southeast Cumberville for their deep understanding of Americana, especially given their roots. They really have treated both sides of the divide fairly in their museum. I think my favorite exhibit was the Fabergé peach pit, owned by Tsar Nikolai III.
And so what's so amazing about that one that you noticed?
It's intricate. It's very breakable, I'm told. It's worth a lot of money. You know, it never came from a real peach. I learned that. I learned that they had to build that Fabergé peach pit because things like that don't grow in nature.
Something that is still being built at the museum is an entire reenactment of the Bay of Pigs incident, all with peach pits.
The exhibit is called the Bay of Pits. I have to say, it's haunting and it's gruesome.
It does bring back memories, doesn't it?
That it does. I think we'd be remiss not to mention the Maruska stacking peach pits. Nesting pits, called informally. It's a peach pit that grew around a peach pit that grew around a peach pit that grew around a peach pit.
You know, you just open one up, and there's another. And you open that one up, and there's another. And you open another one up, and there's another one inside. It just keep going.
Oh, it's magical. At the very center, there's a tiny piece of paper that says, salute glorious motherland Russia, which I think is a really unbiased message that applies to a lot of different, you know, facets of life, not only here in Southeast Cumberville, but in the nation at large. What other businesses really put this town on the map for you, Vladimir?
Well, the other thing that we do here with Peach Pits, again, with those very large ones, is we have Peach Pit bowling lanes. So we have a bowling alley, and all the balls are made of peach pits.
How big are the balls, then? Are they bowling-sized?
Oh, yes. And you have a choice of different weights. So I typically roll a 10-pound ball. It's actually a four-finger ball. I don't know if you guys are familiar with those at all. So the bowling alley draws quite a crowd. We also have numerous bike shops here that use peach pits for you know, many different parts of the bicycle, whether it's a frame or a saddle.
Not the wheels, though?
No, the wheels. No. God, no.
A peach pit seat. Now that seems...
comfortable, I know.
That is certainly what I was going to say. Those are some great choices. Truly resourcefulness on display. Elliot, I know that you spend a lot of time in the various shopping districts here in Southeast Cumberville. What sort of businesses did you see that really piqued your interest?
Well, one business in particular that piqued my interest that seems a little out of place, I'm going to be honest, is Johnny's All-American Peach Shop. And I walked in, and Johnny, his name's Johnny Schnorkel, and he makes everything out of apple seeds. And it just, as a rival to this, you know, Russian-based town, he brought America in here full force. And his whole idea is that apple seeds repurpose better than peach pits.
Now, Johnny Schmorkel, maybe you can clear this up a little bit, Vladimir. There's some rumors that he's sort of a plant, so to speak. He is a toothless man of 300 plus pounds. He only speaks in racist, angry rhetoric, and he's got a lot of American propaganda put up at his apple seed shop. Now, some might say, you know, just a bad apple, but others might say he was kind of hand-selected to open that specific business in the town. Can you shed some light on that for us?
That is indeed a rumor that circles around this town. You know, I will just say that he was put here by the American government, whom none of us like, and we were completely open to competition, you know, which y'all capitalists you call competition, free market economy. My cousin Nikolai Nektarenko, you know, we were fine. He was trying to open many businesses and start supplying people with repurposed nectarine pits, and we were okay with that. But you know, when Schmorkel came in with his apple seeds, he just didn't fit in. We knew that he was put here by the American government, and I feel like he's keeping an eye on all of us. Sort of spying around.
I see. Not exactly the rumor I heard, but it makes perfect sense when you frame it up like that.
And it seems like an age-old allegory, you know, the pit versus the seed. Which is better?
And which came first?
The pit or the seed?
Exactly. Which came first?
Wait, that's rhetorical, right? Because I'm actually not sure.
What? So what do you think, Vladimir?
I would say the pit definitely came first.
Yeah, makes sense.
You can't grow a fruit that has seeds without first having a fruit with a pit. And you know what they say? When you feel something in your gut, you feel it in the pit of your stomach. Mm-hmm. You don't feel it in the seeds. Mm-hmm. You don't feel it in the seeds of your stomach. I feel in the pit of my stomach. I know about Schmorkel. And I know that pits are better than seeds.
Well, there you have it, folks.
Compelling evidence. I think we'd be remiss to move on from giving them the business without giving a shout out to the baby footwear emporium called Pitter Patter of Little Feet. Now, as you might imagine, they make what end up looking like tiny clogs for babies out of peach pits. Notoriously uncomfortable, lead to a lot of stunted foot development here in Southeast Cumberville, but by goodness if they aren't fashionable. Have you ever been by Pitter Patter?
I have indeed, and I'll tell you what, those shoes make our babies strong.
Just the sheer weight of them, you can see the babies struggling to walk down the street even to do their various errands and chores throughout the day.
Well, Vladimir, we've mentioned a lot of awesome, interesting, innovative businesses in the town. Before we move on, are there any that you'd like to give a quick parting shout out to?
No, not that I can think of. I think we've covered that ground fairly well.
Well, and for all our listeners, you will get a coupon on our website to any store in Southeast Cumberville, and you will also get, I guess you'd call it a reverse coupon to Johnny Schmorkel's Appleseed store for 200 times the price of any item.
Yeah, be sure to print that one off. You wouldn't want to show up at Schmorkel's place without it. While our listeners are downloading and printing their reverse coupons for Schmorkel's, I'm guessing one or two of them might be putting something else in the post.
I think you're right, Vince, and I think we should get to those in our next segment.
Wouldn't you like to know?
So, listeners, each week, Vince and I have the opportunity to read some letters about what you're curious about of the town that we're in. Each week, we get to three. This week is no different. And, Vince, I have the first one.
Let's hear it, Elliot.
So, this one comes from Danny. He writes from Nashville, Tennessee.
Thanks for writing, Danny.
Wow. So, he's written this in all caps, first of all. And it's just in blood red writing. I don't think it is blood, but it very well may be.
Yeah, a deep crimson is very emphatic.
He says, "Ha ha, Elliot and Vince, I got you this time. I know that you wouldn't be in a Georgia town if it wasn't the town that was the setting for the 1970s Oscar-nominated thriller Deliverance. So go ahead and talk about it."
I gotta say, taking an aggressive stance.
Yeah, that's an understatement. So unfortunately, Danny, this town that we're in isn't Georgia. You're correct on that one, but it's not the town that Deliverance was filmed in.
No, but it is next door.
It is.
It is next door, and we fought hard to get that movie here, and they didn't have none of it. You know, that when that movie was filmed in the 70s, America and Russia weren't on the greatest of terms. Mm-hmm. Deliverance, however, did help clear that up. I know that was a Reagan and Gorbachev's favorite movie. They both love that movie, and I'm pretty sure that is what helped opened up the Soviet Union was Deliverance. So while it took place in our neighboring town next door, and we were very sad about that, we're very thankful.
Who can forget the famous scene just a decade and a half later where one David Hasselhoff is on top of the crumbling Berlin Wall playing that banjo lick? Ba-da-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that movie was the impetus for Gorbachev and Reagan to learn the banjo together.
That's indeed very true. I'm very glad that you said that. Very glad.
We came closer than maybe we ever have before and maybe ever will, Daniel, but strike three for you. Swing and a miss. Not where they filmed Deliverance, but thanks for writing anyway.
Vladimir, it looks like you have the next fan mail letter right there with you.
I do. Are you guys ready for this one?
We are.
This one reads here, "Dear Vince and Elliot, welcome to Georgia." Well, this is funny. This is actually written from Amanda right here in Southeast Cumberville.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a... She's
interesting.
It's odd. She still put it in the post, but she wanted to know if you have had a chance to eat at any of the fine establishments here in town, and if so, what was your favorite?
Wow, Amanda, you're in luck, because we've got a whole segment for you coming up, but how about a little appetizer, Elliot?
I would love to, Vince. I'll speak to something that I didn't necessarily have on the menu for Elliot's Eats, and it's none other than Johnny Schnorkel's apple-themed restaurant, Appletizing. Basically, it's right next door to his gift shop, as you would imagine. Prices are basically whatever he wants or whatever the market economy dictates.
They're changing. They change every 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm. And so you walk in, and it's just as everything is peach pit based in the rest of the town, this is apple seed based. So you're not going to find your apple sauces, your apple juices, your apple pies. You're going to find seed based items, mostly roasted or boiled seeds.
I had a truly dangerous to consume apple seed smoothie. As you all know, apple seeds contain a poison to humans that are generally harmless in small doses. But when you have an industrial-sized blender full of them, you drink it all in one go. Leads to some hallucinations and mild liver failure.
Notice that Schmorkel never eats his own food. That he sell. He never eats it himself.
Wow, and he is 300 pounds, so he must be eating something. But you know what? I suspect he's eating the apples and then just selling his seeds.
I suspect he frequents Pittman's Pitmaster Barbecue all day, every day.
So you think he is, you know, crossing the line, as they say, and eating peach-themed foods, even though his whole business and his whole life is devoted to being against that?
I would go so far as to say that Schmorkel is a Russian peach himself. Everybody's got a little peach in him, a little pit. If he's going to go and eat shredded up, smoked peach pits, he's going to go and do that, but he needs to be open and clear about it. Just like when we took the wall down. Open, clear, honest. No more of this schmorkeling around.
I think many Americans at home listening to this show will be clapping along with you in agreement. That's what we want here. We want transparency in our government and in our economic systems and in our apple sellers and our apple seed sellers. Wow. Well, thanks for writing in, Amanda. Stay tuned for Elliot's Eats coming up just around the bend, but I've got the third question right in front of me, and it comes from Sue in Livingston, Alaska.
So what does Sue have to say, Vince?
Sue writes, you guys probably know as avid historians, Vince and Elliot, that basketball was first invented by throwing a small leather ball into a peach basket. Isn't it true that in Southeast Cumberville, they play pitsketball, which is much closer to the original concept for the game?
Of course, we all know that basketball was invented when a PE teacher just put up a peach basket on the wall. And so, you know, wouldn't it make more sense, and Vince, I'm sure you'd agree, Vladimir, I'm sure you'd agree, and you can chime in, that the game stayed true to that and continue to be peach-themed?
It has here, and you know, the peach needs to sort of wear off the pit, so we play with a full peach first, and through the dribbling process, the actual skin and sort of fruit of the peach wears off. It's a poor bounce, and you don't get much, you know, off the backboard. But once we get to the pit stage, which, you know, usually ends up about second quarter after halftime, you know, we're throwing that pit left and right. The only minor adjustment we've made is that we've cut a hole in the bottom of the peach basket so that you don't have to fish it out.
That is how it differs from professional basketball in that way.
Yeah, and you don't have to be nearly as fit. We don't do much running on the court. It's just a lot of bouncing. You know, there's about as much physical activity as what do y'all call that? Bounce the ball and you pick up the jacks or something.
Oh, sure, jacks.
Jacks, yeah, it's like that. But and we use pits for that as well. But we don't like to you know, we're not trying to get too active down here.
Well, the cart becomes very slippery with all the peach flesh.
Indeed. And tasty.
And it brings up a couple innovations that the modern game of basketball retained. One are those fashionable spectacles that some players wear on the court, and that came from the peach being dribbled and juice splashing in faces. You needed to wear those goggles. So, you know, your George Mikan's, your Julius Irving's.
Horace Grant.
The original Pittman, for the Southeast Cumberville Pittmans, obviously. And that peach basket actually made a name for some of the taller players in the game because you needed those taller players to reach up and fish the pit out when you'd made a basket.
Yeah, I really wish that hole in the bottom of the basket phenomenon was something that the modern game would adopt as well, because, you know, I might actually think about watching a pro basketball game if I didn't have to worry about the ball hook people retrieving it after every play.
Well, and a lot of times, you know, most of the game was just that guy. They'd give him maybe a stepladder to get up and get the pit out. But a lot of times, you know, half the game was just him through trial and error methods trying to get the pit out of the basket. And that's actually where the Globetrotters started.
Indeed. The Cumberville Globetrotters. I don't know when they moved to Harlem, but, you know, there you have six guys on, you know, stacked up on each other's shoulders, sitting on their shoulders, mm-hmm. six tall, and just sort of pushing the bottom of the basket, trying to get these balls out of there. Oh, man, that's a riot.
It's a heck of a spectacle. Thanks for writing in, Sue. Real interesting topic. And all our questions, as they usually are, were interesting and stimulating. So thanks to all of you who wrote. Even if you didn't get on air, keep writing. Your day will come. Coming up now, much to the delight of Amanda, I presume, is one of our listeners' favorite segments, and certainly my co-host's favorite segment, Elliot's Eats.
So listeners, Elliot's Eats is an opportunity for me to get into one of my true passions, which is food journalism. And I know you guys are literally chomping at the bit until our almanac comes out so that you can get a taste of my forthcoming book, Chew on This, Elliot McNally's Food Guide to Small Town America. I know you are, Vince.
Yeah, I'm inundated with work in progress copies, so I think I'm actually good for the time being.
Did you get the latest manuscript I left on your bed last night?
Elliot, I want to take this time to just briefly interject and say you don't have to give me bi-hourly updates on the manuscript. I literally cannot read through them fast enough before you put another version on my desk.
Actually, I can't see you right now because you're blocked by the stacked manuscripts. I just want to make sure that you're getting the most up-to-date versions. I mean, a lot of them have maybe just a comma removed or a capitalization error fixed, but I think that it definitely...
And Elliot, I really have to push back. The latest version, you only changed it in which way that all the words and all the mentions of the word food had a little exclamation point and a smiley face afterwards.
Yeah.
And not only did it quadruple the length of the document, but it didn't change the inherent nature of the document in any meaningful way.
Is that actually what all these papers are? Here it's just yeah. the same book over and over?
Well, it's not the same book. It's a better version of the same book. I also changed the font, by the way.
Without further ado, let's dive in to this segment. I'm sure our listeners can at least be sated for a few minutes if we take a spin on Elliot's Eats.
I think we should. Vince, I have a real treat for you guys today. The restaurant I went to is a brand new restaurant in Southeast Cumberville. A lot of people haven't tried it yet simply because the reservation list has been years long. 4 years, actually.
You don't say.
You know, sticking with the trend of sort of new food and scientifically based and molecular food, the restaurant I went to this week and ate every meal at this week is simply called P. The letter P. It looks like almost the periodic table. You know, it's all science themed.
Phosphorus. Wait.
It is. Surprisingly, phosphorus isn't involved as much as you'd expect in the meals. It's mostly peach pits.
That sounds very, very hip. It sounds very trendy.
It is.
How was it? Did it live up to the hype, Elliot?
There was a lot of hype surrounding it. Because of the certain pull McNally gets when he comes to town, he can easily get to the front of the line of any restaurant he so chooses.
Truly one of the advantages of our birth name.
Yes, it's one of the many perks we get. And I was able to try everything on the menu. Of course, this is inherently a vegan restaurant because it's all peach pits. A couple of the dishes that I loved were the peach pit vapor. They have a peach pit foam. They're really inventing new, really fun ways to repurpose these peach pits that are actually appetizing.
Fascinating, Elliot. What sort of dishes stuck out to you?
Well, as I said, the vapors and the foams, there was one that was just... They called it sort of a minimalist take, and it was just a peach pit on a plate.
How did you like that? That was my idea.
It was. I did chip a tooth on it, I wanted to say. But
well, that's, you know, it's a, you want to push the boundaries of food, you need to take risks. You know, that's what you got to do if you're going to enjoy it, but you enjoy it. You enjoy
There's
it.
There's that right? saying that goes, and correct me if I've got this wrong, you can't make a peach pit omelet without breaking a few teeth.
Indeed. And just to kind of clear a little bit of a mystery up for you guys, the P, you know, the letter P for mm-hmm. the name P.
Sure.
It does stand for P for peach.
Not phosphorus.
No, definitely not phosphorus. Oh. And also the chef's Pyotr Andreevich is, you know, it's obviously his first initial.
Pyotr? His name is Pyotr.
It sounds pretty authentically Russian to me. I don't know.
Yeah, to me as well. He's a pretty well-known chef internationally. Pretty high honor for him to land here in Southeast Cumberville, and it sounds like he's making a name for himself all over again.
Not a place in America that you would expect to be blown with peach vapors when you sit there just to get the experience. You know, this is not the type of place you think you'd find that sort of restaurant, but Pyotr has really just done a marvelous job.
Well, I know you're a pretty high stakeholder in the restaurant, and its success is definitely something that you take pride in. Something that I will say, and it might be just a little bit of a note, a little bit of constructive criticism, is that P as the name led to a lot of different sciencey, geeky types being on the reservation list. And so, you know, the reason it's so hard to get a table is because there's all these nerds in the restaurant all the time.
Well, you know what they say, nerds is funny.
That was Benjamin Franklin that said that, right?
Yeah, nerds is funny. It's funny, you know, they'll come in with their pocket protectors and their beakers, and they'll be conducting experiments on peaches.
It's basically a space race in there. Let's get down to it. Brass tacks.
Led to a microeconomy popping up outside, kind of on the terrace to the restaurant. You've got a pocket protector stand. You've got an emergency inhaler refilling stand. You've got a little vendor that sells that little white tape that tapes glasses together in the middle.
That's a special kind of tape. You can only get that to tape your glasses together, I've heard.
It has to be very adhesive, you know.
Something that the nerds have enjoyed is that they will take forks from the restaurant when their glasses do break, so they replace one of the arms with a fork.
We've actually begun providing extra forks to go with your meal. So that's we call it a six-fork platter.
So it's not really the different forks needed to eat different types of peaches, like an etiquette dinner. It's just extra forks for the sake of these nerds.
Well, yeah, but it has lent, you know, itself to sort of cultivating a certain atmosphere in the restaurant. So the forks may look the same, but they do have specific uses.
Sure.
But
so, like, what's this? You brought some of them with you. What's this tiniest fork with just two prongs on it?
Right. So that's to remove the oysters from the peach pit shells that we use to kind of mimic, you know, regular sea oyster shell.
Ooh.
You know, so you use a little fork and mm-hmm. you pull the muscle mm-hmm. away from the shell, and it's not a real oyster, but mm-hmm. You know, it is, again, it's a repurposed peach pit oyster. But we use the peach pit to make a shell, and you know, you get a little fork to pull away from there if mm-hmm. you feel like you're ripping that real tendon or whatever in the little sea creature when you eat it.
So you bring up a really good point, that, and there's some stuff that I didn't get to on the menu because it was such a big meal. We have these very scientifically inspired dishes, but then we have these dishes that mimic real life dishes with just peach pits.
Yeah.
So there's one that's like a lateral cut of a peach pit with a painted on little T-bone that looks like a little steak.
Yes. Yes. That's a top seller. That's actually what we use the biggest fork for. Is the T-bone pit. We also do, just for those of you who like to get a little wild, we do a peach vodka in honor of the homeland. Big vodka drinkers down here. We do that. We have, along with those peach mussel oysters, we do a peach swordfish. Sword intact. The sword is intact. And you wouldn't tell the difference between a real swordfish and the peach pit swordfish.
I ordered that. I ordered that very, you know, it did deceive me for a moment. There was a katana on the plate with just a peach pit sort of like also placed near the hilt.
Wait, did you say a katana?
I did, yeah. I ordered the swordfish and that's what came.
It doesn't pop up too often on the menu. I was not consulted about that, but... I'm glad that you liked it.
I did.
I'm glad that you liked it. Don't miss the wild partridge we have too. But again, you know, not partridge, but we put these little wings on it straight on the plate. Stuff it with some thyme, butter. It's a real treat.
A partridge in a peach tree.
A partridge in a peach tree.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I think P has done a more than admirable job standing in as the culinary representative for Southeast Cumberville. I enjoyed my time there. Elliot, sounds like you did as well in spades. I didn't know a lot about that place when I went in. I didn't know that I was going to receive a functional sword on my plate.
I really wish that you'd stop using the sword to chop up my manuscripts I've been giving you.
Elliot, it's out of necessity at this point. I need to literally...
Like, I know that you need to practice, but...
I need to literally strike a swath through the manuscripts to get anywhere in the RV. That said, I'm guessing there's one, two, or maybe even five things that we also didn't know about this town when we came in.
I completely agree, and we should get to that in our next segment called Did You Know?
So Did You Know is our weekly rapid-fire trivia, fast facts, snackable, digestible tidbits of information segment for you, the listener on the go, who needs to know things about the town we're staying in but doesn't have a ton of time. We have time for five each and every week. And Elliot, it looks like you've got the first one right in front of you.
I do. For some reason, I wrote it down this week.
It's tough to remember them off the top of our heads sometimes. I mean,
Vince and Vladimir, did you know that although dogs are the American man's best friend, people in Southeast Cumberville have a different kind of companion?
You don't say, Elliot. What would that be?
Well, that would be none other than what they call the pet peach. And it's just the, you know, the most basic, most friendly, most fun repurposing of a peach pit. That's just a peach pit with some googly eyes stuck on it.
And hair.
And a little troll doll hair, right?
And hair, too.
A little neon-colored hair.
It depends how, which one you buy, but you spend the money, you get a hair. It changes color,
too. So is that why, driving into town, there's a landfill of just a bunch of troll dolls with their hair ripped out?
No, but it is why we do have a high population of young boys. And speaking of did you know... Did you know that the term peach fuzz came from this town?
I didn't know.
I had no idea, Vladimir.
There's number two. Number two for you. Did you know?
And do you harvest this, you shear the young men in the town of their prepubescent facial hair growth, and you use that to put the hair on the little peach friends?
We all need to contribute to the collective. You guys know how communism works.
Sure.
So, yeah, you know, you donate a little peach fuzz, and that's not so much to ask, I don't think.
No, not at all. And I think that does bring up a good point that manliness in Southeast Cumberville isn't determined by the burliest beard. It's determined by the peachiest fuzz.
Indeed.
I didn't know that. Did you guys know that it takes a couple of very specific tools to most efficiently harvest peach pits? And they've really perfected the art here in Southeast Cumberville.
Oh, I didn't know that, Vince. So what does this entail?
Well, you need two very specific things. You need something to slice away the soft peach flesh in one solid swipe, a circular swipe. And then you need a more blunt instrument to kind of break free the pit and, if need be, deconstruct the pit. The best tool for the job for slicing the peach flesh has turned out to be the sickle. And the blunt instrument to free the peach pit, of course, is a hammer.
Wow. So I kind of don't think that's coincidence.
Well, I mean, some might argue, but it's led to the flag of Southeast Cumberville, the city flag, being a hammer crossed with a sickle on a field of red peach flesh.
It is also no coincidence, you guys, and you seem like two fellows who put two and two together quite well, that because of that special tool that we use to get the pits out, we actually have the highest population of one-handed people in this great United States. Accidents happen with a sharp sickle. We're proud of it. We're proud of the prosthetic hands that we make out of peach pits for these folks who maybe aren't using their sickles too carefully. But you got to do what you got to do. And that's just the industry that we have here. You lose a hand and shake another.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe I was looking at the wrong thing, but it seems like most of the prosthetic hands I've seen are just peach pits with five toothpicks stuck in them. Is that true? It seems like people function quite well with that.
I don't think that you really need to describe it that simply. We put some time into doing that. And frankly, toothpicks are not the most durable material. Mm-hmm. So trying to figure out how to get those in the pit as fingers.
That's true.
I mean, that's innovation, ingenuity. So you can call it a pit with, you know, five toothpicks sticking out, but how do you get it attached to your arm? Think about that. There's not a simple answer to that. You don't just stick a toothpick in there and then put it in your stump.
It seems like most people use duct tape. Actually.
I just don't, you know, demean what we do here.
Elliot, you got another did you know for us?
I do. And it actually has to do with, unfortunately, I had written this down previously, as you saw, prosthetics. But did you know that Southeast Cumberville actually made the first peach pit dentures?
That it does make sense in the abstract, but I did not know that, Elliot. Is that so?
You know, arguably it works better than a peach pit hand, but that's up for debate, obviously, with Vladimir. But the people of Southeast Cumberville actually got together as to try and again pay homage to the rest of America. As we all know, George Washington had wooden teeth, so they thought using their peach pit innovation to make some peach pit teeth would help kind of offset the balance. And wouldn't you know it, if they gave the first set to Johnny Schnorkel.
Schnorkel deserved his peach pit teeth, and he still uses them. They're quite brown. He's one of the only one of us left with two hands, and I'll be damned if he doesn't lose one soon.
Well, he refuses to pick up a hammer or a sickle.
Shocking. An American that isn't willing to work hard.
It's shirking in the face of peach pittery.
Schmorkel might as well be a synonym for lazy. You'd think that a large, robust man as himself might want one of our special prosthetic hands. You know how easy it is to eat hors d'oeuvres with that hand? You could put five different pig in a blankets up at one time. You just poke, 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 poke. That's five pokes, one per pig in a blanket. And you can just hang on to those suckers. It's not like a handful of hot dogs wrapped in dough then, you know? I mean, they're separate, still steaming. You eat one at a time. You know he wants one of them hands. He would pick up a sickle and do some work. He might lose one. We'll give him some of those too, ghosts, his peach pit teeth.
And that's one of the forks that you guys supply at P, isn't it?
The five-finger fork?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Innovation at its finest. Wow. Vince.
I didn't know that. Did you guys know there is an almost, some would say, archaic means of settling disputes here in Southeast Cumberville, still on the books, still in legislature, and even occasionally used today?
Wow, so what is that, Vince?
Well, should you have a problem or a sort of dispute with someone else here in Southeast Cumberville, as long as you're both citizens, you can challenge the person to a duel. And they call it pitting against each other. And they fight in a pit with pits.
And so basically it's a last man standing type of scenario.
Now, in modern times, typically the combatants won't want to fight to the death. No one wants to die, obviously, especially over something as simple as a parking ticket or zoning laws. But they will fight to the first blood. And they use something, a weapon called pit knuckles, which are a piece of bandage with peach pits in it that you strap around your hands to make sort of a makeshift bludgeoning device.
I just want to jump in real quick and let everybody know, all the listeners out there, we're trying to get rid of this in our town. This is what I would call a scourge. You call it a modern scourge to Southeast Cumberville. You know, we've got these guys running around, and it's like they treat it as if it's some sort of underground Fight Club type thing.
Uh-huh.
And you guys know, you know Michael Vick?
Yeah.
You know, he played football. You know, he's like dog fighter. Uh-huh. He's got dog fighting skills. He's got all these recruits. He's going around. He's doing this whole same thing as he was with those pit bulls. He's thinking he gets transferred over to this pit fighting with human peach pits. It's a bloody sport, man. We're trying to get it out of here.
Wow. So you heard it here, folks. I mean, if you want to see pit fighting, maybe come sooner than later, because
it's an endangered activity for good reason. Southeast Cumberville, if I've learned one thing from my time here, it's a town that's looking towards the future.
Without Michael Vick and Johnny Schmorkel, they can be deported, as far as I'm concerned.
I think everyone here would agree with you,
and spoken like a true American.
I'll build a wall around this place if I have to.
That's the sound of progress.
And we're progressing to our last segment, one we call Wish You Were Here.
So in a perfect world, listeners, each and every one of you would jump in our RV with us every week if we could find room through all the manuscripts. And we'd carry you one by one to the towns that we visit so we could all experience it together. But since we can't, this is the next best thing. It's an audio postcard to you, listener, thanking you for your patronage and telling you what this town is all about.
Why don't I start it off?
Please do, Elliot.
Dear listener, wish you were here in Southeast Cumberville, Georgia.
A town where they've learned how to use the American and Russian peach pit in a million different ways.
In a town where at the forefront of this innovation is none other than Vladimir Pichachenko.
A town bonded together not only for their love of peach pits, but for their communal economy and their hardworking spirit.
In a town where you can eat a peach, you can have a peach for a hand, you can inhale peach vapor.
Town where you might catch a little ire if you're seen frequenting the stores or establishments of one Johnny Schmorkel.
But a town you're going to want to take a big, juicy bite of.
A farewell from these parts to yours.
Hey listeners, thanks for joining us in Southeast Cumberville. Hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you join us again next week when we're in Venice, Colorado.
Venice, Colorado is a sister city of Venice, Italy, and it's set in the Rockies. They've no roads, only an elevated gondola system, so stay tuned. It's going to be a good one.